Hi, this is Dr. Kimberly Leonard, author of Visualizing Happiness in Every Area of Your Life and host of this podcast, Incredible Life Creator. And today, my guest is Miss Sally Lotz. Hey, Sally.
Hi.
Thanks for being with us today. So, just so people can get to know you, I'm going to go ahead and read your bio and then we'll start talking. So,
Okay.
Sally Lotz is a four-time published author of children's books. Runner up in the Writer's Digest 50th Annual Short Story Contest in 2022. Her most recent book, The Truth is a Lie, came out in May of 2023 and is based on her real life experience of growing up in a cult. As a writing coach, she guides her clients through the many phases and facets of writing a book, hosts workshops, and many masterclasses. She is a frequent podcast guest discussing writing and writer struggles in their creative journeys. Sally calls the Orlando area home. When she's not writing or immersed in a book, you can find her at the beach, on a kayak, at the springs near her house, in a coffee shop, or caring for her numerous plant babies. All right. Well, we're excited to hear your story. So tell us about you.
Wow, was that my bio? Okay. Is that me? Well, if I mean I start way back when I was a kid. I mean, you said it, I grew up in a cult, and the cult that I grew up in did not allow for education or creativity or just basically being your own person. Every decision and choice in my life, from my socks down to nail polish and earrings, was decided for me. So that was a kind of a difficult childhood. And I also had a home that was not the best of homes. I had an abusive home. And so both of those things together made me become a very invisible child and a very invisible person at a very young age because I did not want to be seen or heard. And I think that's probably where I developed my love for reading very young, is I would go into these books and even TV shows and movies and escape, like, I want to be there. That's where I want to go. And even reading other people's stories, I'm so drawn to other people's stories, people who don't look like me, people who have live in different places in the world, who lived a long time ago or who are living now. I'm always drawn to their stories and what they overcame and how they got to where they are. So.
Wow. Yeah. So I think a question everybody wants to know, whenever you hear someone grew up in a situation like that is, how did you get out?
Well, it wasn't easy. My life didn't start in the cult. My life started normal, like every child, you have a family and a home, and then all of a sudden my mom converted over to this cult. So I had a life before and then a life after. So actually when I was 15, I was kicked out of the house because I had a boyfriend who was not part of the cult and I was not playing the game anymore. And I was asked to leave because I was a bad influence on my little sisters. And I say boyfriend very loosely. We held hands at school. We met at the library. We never went on dates. I didn't go to any school dances. I didn't do anything. I would see him, like, I would pass notes, didn't even have, we didn't have cell phones, so I couldn't like call or text or anything like that. So it was very loose. But the irony of that is I was kicked out for being a bad influence, yet I had people living in my home. My stepfather, who was a terrible human being, he's a monster. He was the worst influence on everyone's lives, but he was allowed to stay in the home. This is part of the culture of living, being in a cult, is the innocent, the victims are made to feel like if they're the villain, that they're bad, and the monsters are made to feel like they're the victim. They switch it all up. So yeah, so 15.
And where did you go at 15?
I actually stayed in our home for about a month, but nobody would talk to me. And I was like, go to school and come home. And I went to live with my dad, who I never really spent any time with, but it took about a month because he was in the Navy. So he had to like change where he was. He had to do a bunch of things so that he could not be overseas anymore. But it was a very big shift for me mentally because I didn't trust men. I didn't really know any good men. And I'm 15 and I'm going from everything, like I said, controlled from what socks I wore to, hey, this is normal life. You can wear what you want. You can listen to what you want. You can read what you want. It was a very big culture shock for me.
And so then you lived with him until you graduated and
Yes, I lived with him until I graduated, and I think I moved out when I was just turned 19. I just turned 19, and my dad had gotten remarried, and I didn't feel like I felt fit in the house anymore. I was not healthy. And my dad didn't know anything about what I was experiencing, and I'm sure if he did, there's no way he would have let me go. But I had my path that I thought I needed to take,
Wow. Did he
So
understand what you had come from as far as the cults?
no, no. And he passed away very young. I never told him. Yeah. 'Cause he got sick and was like, yeah, I can't tell him. It's not going to do any good to tell him. It'll just upset him. So, but he never knew. That's why I say I don't think he wouldn't have let me leave at 19. I think if he knew all the battles that were going on inside of my head. But I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't know any of this,
At the same time, in a way, it was somewhat mature of you to almost protect him from that information.
I don't know why I made that choice, but I just felt like it was something like he can't do anything about it now anyway, and it'll just hurt him. So,
Exactly. So a lot of times when people are in a place where they don't have those choices or they don't really know who they are, there's a journey there. So what was your journey? How did you start doing the healing? How did you start finding out who you are and what you like and what you wanted to be and do and
It was a long road. Around then, because I'm a older teenager. I'm almost in my 20s, right? But I'd never experienced any of the things that everybody else has experienced, like going to the movies, like school dances, and choosing my own clothes, and so I kind of started, with music and movies and going to see stuff that I knew, this is rated R. I'd be in so much trouble, I made friends that I wanted, people I wanted to be friends with, not people I was told I had to be friends with. I tried to go, I did finish high school. I graduated really at the top of my class, amazingly enough. But I tried to go to college, but it just I could not I couldn't do it. I have ADHD and dyslexia, and I didn't know that at the time. And me going to college, it was so hard. And not that I'm stupid, but it was very, very difficult. And I didn't have the social skills to do that either, because that's like a whole different world, right?
It is.
I just went to work. I just got a job, and as I don't even know how it happened, but I got a job in a regular company, not like retail. I never worked retail, or I did work retail. I never worked fast food or any of that kind of stuff that teenagers do. Mm-hmm. So I got a job and a corporate job doing accounting. Mm-hmm. And it paid the bills. And then I met my first husband when I was 20, and then I got married. Because that's what you do, right?
So how did that go from this, you know, you don't trust men and now you're getting married. So what happened with that?
Because in my little pea brain, what I'd been taught was you need a man to take care of you. Mm-hmm. So in came this man. And he's talked the talk, he walked the walk, he felt familiar. It was like, okay, this is what I know. He was older than me. And so I got married. and then I had my three kids before I was 26. I had three sons who I'm so glad I have. But around, I'd say, my oldest was about 10. No, he was younger than that, but it all starts to blur together. Mm-hmm. My husband at the time decided he was going to go to this church. And we'd already been going to church, but this one was a little bit different. And I didn't like it the moment I walked in. And I couldn't put my finger on why I didn't like it. And I couldn't explain to him why I didn't like it. And he just kept saying that I just didn't have any faith. He was, you know, he kept saying it was my fault, right? So I was like, okay, I must be doing something wrong. You know, come to find out. I just found this out recently. My mind was blown of what happened. Well, let me go back a little bit. As we're going to this church, I'm seeing all these red flags and my body is literally, I'm starting to shut down. I went into like severe depression and severe anxiety where I could not leave the house. And I had three kids, right? And a husband who was checked out. He was, you know, doing his thing. And I found out this year, watching a show about cults on Amazon, that it's called The Shiny Happy People or whatever it is, the Duggar story, that where they had all the kids and they belonged to this group. That's where he was taking me. Oh, no. He was taking me to this church because all the women and all the families had 12, 13 kids. And they were all like, Sally, why you only have three? Aren't you listening to your husband? You need a quiverful. And I was like, I know. So looking back, I go that I'm glad that happened because that is what triggered me into that deep anxiety and that deep depression. And I started therapy. Mm-hmm. I went, got therapy and understood. I got therapy for religious PTSD and abuse and all that, and figured out that's what was going on with my body, why I couldn't do things. Mm-hmm. And as I was healing, my ex-husband was like, she's not that little submissive wife anymore that just does whatever I say. And that ended the marriage because I refused to be a doormat and I was human. But also in this time frame, part of my healing process became writing. And my therapist was saying, just write your story, just write whatever you want, write letters to people who aren't here anymore. I wrote letters to my dad and told him things, because he had already passed away. I started writing some poems and some short stories and things like that, and didn't really do anything with them. I just held on to them in a book and just kept writing. So that's where I started writing. It was therapy.
And writing is therapy, I think. You know, sometimes we're writing in a journal. Recently, I had someone on my podcast a few months ago, and he does this grapho analysis where he looks at your handwriting. Oh. And then he tells you, you know, positive and negative things about your personality based on your handwriting. And so if you wanted to work on some of those, you actually change the strokes. And so I was practicing writing certain things. And I noticed things changing in my life, and it was just like a 3-week process. But writing, I think, taking something from here and putting it here, or even if you're just writing the like I was just writing Bible verses
Yeah, you could
when I
just
was
write
practicing.
things. Yeah,
But just
yeah.
writing is so therapeutic and so peaceful most of the time, unless you're, I guess, angry and you're
Well, it's really interesting because I am a writing coach, and one of the things that I work with people on is they get writer's block, or they think they're not a good writer, or they don't know where to start. And the first thing I say is to take a notebook. You can't use your computer. You have to use a pen and paper. And you just write whatever. You can write, I am a writer, I'm a writer, I'm a good writer. I can write books, I can write this. Or you write, a song, you just write what you're feeling, right? Write a diary as your main character. Pretend like you're that person and you're writing in your diary. And but it can't be on the computer because there is something, like you said, there it's tactile and it's getting it out of your head. I say it comes out of your head, down your arm, past your heart, and it gets onto the paper. So it's a good thing.
Yeah,
I like the handwriting analysis, though. I might check that out.
Yeah, it was with Naveen. You're just looking for a Naveen's podcast. It was a
Okay.
few months ago.
Okay, I'll definitely
So,
listen to that.
yes. So, yeah, and it is very therapeutic, and also just telling your story is therapeutic. We journal about our lives, and a lot of times we don't think anyone will ever look at it. But some of the best books are compilations of people's diaries. Even if it was fixed up just a little bit to make it sound better. I mean, the Diary of Anne Frank. I mean,
Hello, I know. Even I have an old journal of my great grandmother's. It's a scrapbook, actually, where she took newspaper clippings from the day and put them in this big book, but then she wrote things. And they're not really meaningful things. They're like, today it rained a lot and I was really cold. I wish I had firewood. But come on. I get a little peek into somebody who I never met, right? And I understand a little bit about her just by a few sentences that she wrote. So, yeah.
Yeah, it just helps us connect. I mean, that's the way to connect. Like, you said when you first came to your dad's house or even to college, you really didn't know how to socialize or connect with people. But you can connect through your words. I mean, there's people that are shy as can be, but they're writing blogs and people are, thousands of people are reading their blog every day. And they might not want to even walk outside their door, but people are connecting with them through their blog.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to me how people will share something in a book or written down in a journal or something, but they'll never say it out loud. And
So true, so true. A lot of things.
then I have people on the opposite end, and this again, the people who I coach who are writing books about their lives, but they don't want to share everything. And I'll tell them, you got to go. I'm reading this and I don't feel any connection with you. I'm not even interested. What do you mean? I go, because you got your wall up. I can feel it in your writing. And they're like, oh, okay.
So it won't be interesting when someone goes to read it.
No, and it's not that it's interesting. What it is it's showing that you're human. You're being vulnerable. That's how you connect with another person in writing, because they see themselves and they're not the only one that thinks that way. Because I can't tell what you're thinking and you can't tell what I'm thinking, but if I write my words down on paper, it's there for you to digest and do what you want with. And that's, I just think it's wonderful. I think
It
everyone
is
should
really
write
wonderful.
a
So, I mean, you help people write books pretty fast. I'm trying to think in your bio, was it 60, 90 days? You
So originally I started with a 30-day program because I've done that 5 times and it's doable, but it's so scary to so many people who aren't ready to go in that space. So I've done it now. you have an option between 30 and 90 days. And I picked that time frame for a very specific reason. And one is it's a season and you need to write within that creative season. Otherwise, you're going to pick up this pen and paper or laptop or whatever you're working on. You're going to write for a couple hours and then you're going to shut it and you're going to come back to it a month later or 2 months later. And you're not in that same headspace where you started. You're definitely in a different headspace. Emotionally, mentally, you could have been in a good space when you started and a bad space when you came back or vice versa. And you really need to stay in that creative process. And if you keep it just that short frame of time, you can get it done. I mean, that's what Stephen King does.
Yeah. So, I mean, if someone does a 30 day though, I'm thinking, are they writing all day? Do they just like, okay, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to write for 30 days. How much
time? No, actually, there's a thing every year called NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month. And that's how I got started doing this. And when I work with my clients, there's a lot of prep work we do beforehand to get them set up, because most people I work with haven't written a book before and they have no idea what it entails. So I help them lay out this wonderful framework and we lay out their time. I teach them time management skills and how many words they need to write. And then it's just go. And so if you think about it, wouldn't you rather have that book finished quickly in 30 days? Or would you rather take 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, 9 years to write it?
I was going to say, I think my book took me 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it morphed, like you said, the space changed. And then I was just about to publish it and my fiance died. So I went back to writing and put that in the book.
Yeah.
So it changed many times.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just the reality is we're human and we don't stay. We have a lot of things pulling at us now in life, you know, all different directions. And creativity is something that when you get in that creative space, it just takes off. And so if you take it off and then you just shut it down, it takes a while for you to pick it back up again and you got to get back in the groove. So, yeah.
So how many hours a day do people usually work on it when they do that 30 day? Do they actually take that whole time like a sabbatical vacation or?
No. So I have people set appointments up with themselves and time, and they have to work if they have people in their lives. Everybody's on board with this. This is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. It's 30 days. We can do it. Mm-hmm. And it depends on what kind of book they're going to write and who the book is for. We determine how many writers go by word count, not by page numbers. So we determine how many words they need to write. It's just simple, like divide it up. Mm-hmm. You got to write 2,000 words a day. That could be an hour for somebody. That could be 2 hours for somebody. That could be 20 minutes if you're like in the groove, you know. And I just say, if you're still in the groove and your word count's done for the day and you still have time, keep going. Don't stop. Just go with it.
Now, when you're doing that project, do you have people put it on the computer?
I actually had somebody who did it by hand because that's what she preferred.
Uh-huh.
But the computer is much better because that's part of the framework that I have them set up. I teach them how to use Word,
mm-hmm.
teach them how to dictate. I teach them how to set it up properly. So when they're done, they have something that's manageable instead of just a long document.
Uh-huh.
I forgot the question.
Well, I just asked you.
My brain went off in another direction.
They do it on the computer or writing.
That's better on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime you're like stuck, like you have a little writer's block, or your characters are falling flat, or you're just having trouble with your writing, then I always say, get your notebook and your pen out and just write. Even if you're copying the words of another book, which I do all the time, I'll get my favorite book out. Mm-hmm. I'll lay it down and I will copy the words. Mm-hmm. It helps.
Yeah. So when sometimes you're working with people with a nonfiction, some people you're working with fiction, there a big difference in how you're setting those up or?
The only difference is, for the most part, a fiction novel will have the story arc, which means you have a hero who's on his journey or her journey, and they have to have things happen to them at certain points. And you have the inciting incident, and then you have, there's like a point of no return. But I teach the same thing for fiction or nonfiction, is because you're still telling a story to your reader and you want to keep them engaged through your fiction. Sorry, your nonfiction. You don't want them to be bored and put the book down or get too confused or get too overwhelmed. And you want them to read at least the chapter. So there's some tricks, of setting up your chapters so that they read a whole chapter and maybe they go on to the next, or maybe they save the next chapter for the next day. But you want them to read the entire book, not just the introduction, and go, okay, that was good, and put it away. So there's some things to keeping your reader engaged, depending upon what they're writing. Like I said, if you're writing a memoir and you're not going deep enough and being transparent enough and telling people what's really going on, it's not engaging enough. It's your reader picks up on it right away. So yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, even for business books, I teach about pillars instead of chapters. What pillars do you want to hit? And let's make sure we hit each one, and use your own voice, your own style, your own personality. Don't make it dry like a list of facts, because that's, I don't want to read
I don't want to
that.
read that
Yeah.
either.
Every book that I have read that's been a self-help guide or a better your life guide or even a memoir, I've always been drawn to the voice of the author who's writing it. Like, so Jen Sincero is she's the best. If you want to read an example of what I'm talking about, she has the Badass series of books. You can just read a chapter and you'll see her very clearly and succinctly in this book, and it comes across. And that's what you should be doing if you're writing nonfiction.
I mean, that makes sense to me. So I'm in healthcare, and so we are given all these research articles to read
And
in the
they're kind of
background
boring, right?
and research. They did this research study. It's the most boring stuff.
Yeah,
It's
but you
definitely
have
not.
to read
But we
it.
have to read it because we need to know about the studies. We need to know
Right.
what the medicine stuff is. But yeah, it's so boring. So if you can take nonfiction and actually make it interesting, I'm rereading the Richest Man in Babylon again. Same thing. It's got all the ideas about basically financial literacy, but it's a really old book that they used a story of these friends who had
Okay.
one friend who made it. He was the richest guy in the city, and the friends are all not doing so well. And so they go to their friend and they're asking them questions. And so that's how the book is put together. It's
Oh.
teaching them the concepts as they go.
Okay. I
It's
haven't read that one, but
very old.
The Alchemist to me is a good one. It's nonfiction. It's written as fiction, but it's clearly a very strong story and point of view and guide, a life guide that they're getting across, that the writer's getting across to you. But he's telling it as a piece of fiction. So that is always a way to do it as well. You don't have to tell your book as, this is the list of things to There's so many different possibilities, and what it should be is it should be unique to you and what you feel and what you want to do, not what all the trends are saying, and not, oh, I need to have an Amazon bestseller under on my LinkedIn bio to be credible. That's not why you should be writing a book. And people don't like that when I say that, but yeah.
Well, let's just talk about that for a minute. So, yeah, it is actually kind of a trend or popular right now to do that. And
Yeah.
the thing is that people are getting that title by doing certain strategies. It's not like organic. They're not organically a best seller. They're doing these strategies to get that title, if
To
you
get the
will.
title, and nobody's reading the book. They're just buying the book on a certain day all at the same time. And it's a very specific category that maybe only has 5 books in it. And it's an Amazon bestseller. And so it's not a bestseller, it's an Amazon bestseller. So to me, and in fact, I had somebody reach out to me on Facebook today and thanked me for telling her this, that your book, because she wrote a book for her clients, your book should be for the people that you want to read it, and it should speak to them and should help them. It should be their guide. You're not writing a book to just hold it and say, I wrote this book, it's a bestseller on Amazon, I have credential, I'm credible. And she said, I did that and I'm getting so much positive feedback from my readers. They're connecting with me. She goes, I don't have a bestseller, but look at, she sent me a review. And I was like, that's awesome. See?
And that's true.
And
That's
your
really
book's
what you
getting
want.
read. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've known people who are business people, and they're great business people, and they're very successful, and they write a book for that very reason, so they can show the book. And I read the book, and I'm like, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
I mean, the material is not even helpful. It doesn't reflect them. It doesn't reflect even their knowledge. It's
Yeah.
like they just wanted something to, like you said, hold
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And the way that those books are done typically, and this is not everybody, because I know some wonderful programs out there, is a template. So they're you're given a template. And it's like, do this, 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 and this. It's robotic. Or you're given a formula, write down 10 things about your business, and then that's it. But what I was saying earlier about the Jen Sincero example is she wrote a book about how to make money. And she wrote it with her background, she wrote it with her voice, and she is contagious when you read it. She's like, I can do that. I can do what she's saying. Yeah.
Exactly,
And
and
it's
that's
credible. She never stands up and says, hey, I wrote a bestseller.
No, I've read some of her books, and they're quite
Yeah.
entertaining. They're very
They're
entertaining.
entertaining, but that's her. Somebody told me, yeah, she's kind of over the top. I said, but that's her personality. If you see her on YouTube or you see her anywhere else, she's not putting on a show. That's her. So, and like you said, reading a business person's book, and it was really boring, and it didn't reflect them or their knowledge, right? And I know those books cost a lot of money, that people spend a lot of money to have that book and have it as a bestseller. And that goes against everything that I teach my clients.
Well, and as a reader, it's so disappointing.
Is.
You go in thinking, okay, this guy's going to give me some nuggets,
Yeah.
vast experience, and then they just rehash the same thing, like SMART goals. Well, everybody knows what a SMART goal is.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
why did they put that in the book? That's just no purpose.
Yeah. It's a formula. It's a template.
It.
That being said, there are some people out there who do have wonderful, wonderful books. I know a couple of friends who are do a lot of public speaking, and they have wonderful stories. And they have all written books, sharing their stories. But they're also, again, like I just said, they're sharing their stories. It's not a, I wrote this book to be a bestseller. They wrote their books because their audience was asking for them, and they gave them what they wanted. And that's the difference.
So I know there's so many people that say, I want to write a book someday. I want to write a book someday. I mean,
I hear that all the time.
Yeah, all the time. But so many people don't sit down and do it because it just seems so overwhelming. And here you come, here comes Sally. Oh, we can do this in 39 to 90 days.
Yeah.
So
that's where the pedal meets the metal, and people will either leave and I go, okay, then you weren't serious, or they'll go, I'm interested. I want to know more. And I'll tell you, my very first client, she had been working on her book for 6 years, and we met, and she goes, okay, I want to do this. And she finished her book in 30 days.
Wow.
Amazing. And she's got a publisher, as in someone's paying her to publish her book. She's not paying someone to publish her book. She's getting money for her book up front. So,
so if people wanted to contact you, find out about, you know, your I don't know if you call it a classes or your workshops, tell us all about you. How do they find you?
So my website is my name. It's super easy. It's sallylotz.com. I have free consultations, which is right there on the homepage. So I always encourage someone, we talk about whatever your project is. You can ask me questions and I'll ask you questions because sometimes it's not a fit. Sometimes your book is already done, but I have a way for you to get it published. And I have a lot of connections. So I might be able to share three people with you that you can possibly have publish your book. That happens quite a bit. So if you go to my website, do that. I have a little list of kind of how my programs work. My workshops, I kind of put those on pause for right now, but I will start having them again, I think in February. Most of them, my workshops are usually free because they're 30 minutes and I announce them on LinkedIn. But if you go to my website and you sign up for my newsletter, you will get the advance notice so you can reserve a seat. And yeah, they're 30 minutes. They're just little mini classes of different things. And sometimes it's just a Q&A session where people ask me questions. Mm-hmm. Or I have an expert in the writing industry. Mm-hmm. Come in, because I am in the writing industry. I have been working with, I have a literary agent. I work with publishers. I work with other writers. So I come from it as a writer, not a coach.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
If that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now I have a personal question for you.
Okay.
What gives you the most happiness and fulfillment in your life right now?
I forgot. Let's see. For me, right now, when I get a review from somebody, it says they read my book and they tell me more than they liked my book. They'll give me some reasons about why they liked my book and how it affected them. So that gives me a lot of joy. Seeing someone else get excited about writing on a project that they thought that they could never do, that brings me joy. Then, of course, kittens and puppies, you know, that kind of thing. Hot cup, a good cup of coffee, you know.
The little things are so important.
Little things. For me, I get excited over like little things. Like I have my Christmas lights up. I was like so excited to put my Christmas lights up and look at the ornaments, you know, and I'm kind of, yeah, little things.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here on the podcast and for sharing your knowledge. And I'm sure a lot of people will be calling because all those people that said they want to write a book, it's time to call.
That's right. 2024. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Quit waiting.
Right. So I have one last question for you.
Okay.
What is your best advice on living an incredible, amazing life?
Ooh. Well, my philosophy has always been be kind to others, and not just kind, but treat other people how you want to be treated. I've had days where I'm super lonely and I'll go to the store and I'll see somebody else and I'll go, they're lonely, and I'll just smile and say, hi. or I'll see a shorter lady and I'm tall. I'm like, do you need help? Because she can't reach the top shelf. So, you know, it's goofy, but it's just doing little things like that. You know, just going out of your way to be kind to somebody. It doesn't take much. And just smile.
That's great advice. Well, thank you so much, Sally.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay.